America Weekend. I don't care about you, just thought that we could get along. It was high on a feeling. I said I'd be there at 5:35, but I guess I was wrong. Cause I got lost thinking how we fly down a parkway, my fifth in the driveway was full. I was. Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kolegi.
I'm Christina Stoffo.
Our next guest has been described as, quote, Bruce Springsteen meets Kanye West,
oh, yeah,
unquote. Now, you've just heard a bit of his new single, Tipping Point. It is great to say hello to Atlantic Records recording artist Skrizzly Adams. Skrizzly, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to be here, guys.
It is great to have you on. Now, that is quite a comparison, and it's quite a combination. Springsteen meeting Kanye. Tell us about that.
I mean, Atlantic Records, I try to make music that, you know, it's ultimately just me, Skrizzly Adams, but people have kind of drawn on the fact that I make, like, heartland rock music in the vein of Bruce Springsteen, in the vein of Tom Petty, John Mellencamp, Bob Seger, but I come from an urban background,
mm-hmm.
So I like to always think, you know, what would Kanye West do? What would, you know, Timbaland do, these other urban producers? And I like to flip it. I like to take music of the past, take music of now, and make music of the future, ultimately. So when people say it's Bruce Springsteen meets Kanye West or anything of that lane, I'm flattered. So, yeah, that's what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, those are two, like, epic artists right now in this day and age, so that is pretty cool. So tell us a little bit about Tipping Point, writing the song. How did it come about?
Yeah, so Tipping Point's my debut single with Atlantic Records right now. It's a song kind of capturing that intensely frustrating, yet simultaneously liberating moment where you realize something in your life is coming to an end. The lyrics of the song depict a relationship coming to an end, but when I wrote the song, I was just really trying to capture an emotion of, it could be a car dying. Your car dies, and you realize
it's dead. And that's your favorite car.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Or you're at a job, and you realize something's coming to an end. It's just a kind of moment of realization kind of record. And throughout the record, the main character's asking, is this tipping point? And then he realizes, yes, it's tipping point, because the motor's giving out. And it's intense, it's cool, it's kind of catchy. Definitely check it out. I'm really proud of that record.
What I get a kick out of is when you first started to describe your sound and your style, you started with a lot of throwback references. You were talking about Bob Seger. So you understand music, and you come at this with a historical perspective. You know what's come before you. And how difficult is it for you to try to blend certain elements of music, certain styles? You said you come from an urban background with what you like, with what you grew up with. You know, you take Timberland and you start trying to mix in a little Bob Seger sound. That's not easy to do. How difficult is that?
Honestly, I find it very, very easy because that's just who I am. Like, I'm so passionate about classic rock. I mean, I absolutely, absolutely, you know, worship Bob Seger, John Mellencamp. This is what I do. I'm a huge Lynyrd Skynyrd fan, a diehard Stones fan. But I kind of entered music trying to become an urban producer. That was what I thought was going to be an easy entry point for me. It clearly wasn't. It wasn't until I started singing more like Van Morrison and doing stuff like that that things started making sense. And I never try to combine the two as a gimmick. It's never like, oh, we need more trap drums, or we need more guitar here, or we need more. No, it just, the record just needs to feel right. So for me, it comes very organically, and I like to keep it that way. I want to tap into what really turns me on, what gets me excited.
And I feel like it's hard to, at this point, create music that stands out, that's not the norm, that's not something you're going to hear, you know what I mean, but still make it relevant.
Of course.
I mean, I think that just you being able to do something like that in itself is extremely impressive.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Now, where did the name come from? Skrizzly Adams.
Yeah,
I don't know many Skrizzlies.
Me either.
Sure.
You're the only one.
So where did this name come? I'm thinking of, now this is way before your time, there was a TV show called Grizzly Adams about a guy that was living in the woods with bears. So tell me, where did Skrizzly come from?
Sure, no problem at all. It kind of comes back to where the music comes from. I mean, obviously a bit gimmicky at times, but my whole idea was, like, I'm making Americana music. Music that's classic Americana repackaged in a way that'll shed light on stories of the American man in a different kind of light. So it was pretty simple. I took looked through American folklore names, found Grizzly Adams, and then I just flipped it. I took an S, you know. No different than Eminem, you know.
Right,
the reference point. The reference point was literally an Eminem. It made sense because his name was Marshall Mathers. So if you had Eminem, it was going to be, had all the E and the M and the I and the N all bounced back.
Candy company coming after you if you just use the M and the M. So we got you got trademark issues too.
Okay, so talk to me about performing live in front of an audience. It has to be scary and awesome at the same time.
Scary, awesome, and everything in between.
Yeah.
I just came off tour with Elle King, and she's been on fire. She has like that hit record, X's Nose.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
We had a tour together, and it was sold out, which was awesome. But I usually play with a band when I'm playing in the Jersey, New York general area. But it was just solo acoustic for this opportunity, so it was like 1,500 people in the audience, and then me like a doofus just standing there with an acoustic guitar. But it was awesome. I mean, I never had done something like that before, so it was kind of like extremely liberating. I remember I was like 2 songs into the very first show, and I was like, it's good, but it's not, doesn't feel as explosive as it is with the band. And I kind of learned from those shows that, I have 1,500 people just staring at me, and once I just started talking and started opening up, stopped following the playbook of songs, and just, started goofing around, things started getting really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a lot of fun with that. I'm about to head on tour for 19 dates starting next week all over the country. And I'm doing that with my full band, so I'm excited to kind of combine everything together, the big explosiveness of the arena rock sound I'm trying to capture, along with, like the talking and communicating and just having fun with, hundreds and thousands of people all at once.
You mentioned before about how you started off with the idea you were going to be a producer, and then you kind of morph into the performance end. When you were trying to produce, are you thinking, oh, this isn't the sound I want? I know what I want, but I can't get it from this person or that person. How difficult was it for you to make that transition to say, you know what, I just got to do this myself. I can make this sound myself rather than try to get somebody else to do what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, it was definitely more of a subconscious kind of understanding of that. Because, I was young and I was naive. I was thinking, well, I'm so talented. I can, if someone's making this sound, I can meet them halfway and I can do all these things. But the more I got into it, number one, I wasn't technically good enough to compete with other people. And number two, all the magical things I was uncovering were all sounding really left field. So it was like, if I was making something that's so compelling and it was left field, I couldn't necessarily plug it into another artist's formula, so I'd be constantly turned down, and people that would accept me wouldn't necessarily be popping off so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I was on to something, and I think there was a moment of revelation. I was like 19. I was working on something that I was trying to get to Wiz Khalifa. I was like, I need to get this to Wiz Khalifa, and I know it's going to be something. Ironically, now I'm working on a bunch of stuff for Wiz Khalifa.
Oh, cool!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow.
So I was working on this thing, and I was just playing it. And I was up in the studio. It's like 2 a.m. And I was like, this is great. I know it's gonna be something, and whatever, one thing leads to another, and I'm just like, no, it's not a Wiz Khalifa song. And then I just started singing over it, and I have one like a countryish kind of twang to me of a Heartland rock vibe, which is nothing like Wiz Khalifa, and I'm like, this sounds way better. The next morning I listen again, I'm like, this sounds way better. And I just kind of realized, like, I am the package. I take one and one and I get five out of it. So,
oh, yeah.
There you go.
That's a very powerful statement. I
sure
am the package.
That's right.
But you know what? That's the confidence you need to make it in this industry.
You can't go
in half-hearted. You got to go in saying, hey, I'm it. I'm the package deal. I'm going to make this happen.
Right. There's nothing wrong with ego in any way, shape, or form when it comes to the arts.
And he has a great beard.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Yes, he does.
I like
yes,
it.
He does.
I appreciate the confidence.
I couldn't grow a beard like that if I tried. So.
Really?
Yes.
You're
no.
A man.
No, you know what it is, though? I got lighter hair than you. And if I try to grow, it'll come in patchy. It'll come in red.
Yeah,
it'll come in blonde.
Patchy.
No, I'll look like I was just like beaten up by a cat. It's just not good. I can't do what you can do, Scrisley.
I appreciate that. I had a full beard since I was 15, actually.
Oh,
really?
Wow. Well,
I was like that kid in high school that was able to grow a full beard.
Look at you.
With the connection and everything.
Scrisley goes home on a Friday, comes back on Monday, puberty hits, boom, he's got like this giant beard going. Wow.
Awesome.
One more thing we got to ask you before we go. You have your own line of beef jerky?
Oh, that's right.
What? The magic question you asked.
Yes, what is this with jerky? Tell us about the jerky.
Sure, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm passionate about music. It's what I do. But jerky's number one for me. I'm really trying to create a revolution.
Okay.
In the food market. I just created my first product, Grizzly Adams Beef Jerky. The best jerky in the market, the absolute lowest sodium in the market, an amazing source of protein, low calories, no carbs.
Wow.
Perfect post-workout, perfect snack. So yeah, I started selling them at shows, and I'll tell you, man, like, that was it. That was I went on stage, said beef jerky in Madison, Wisconsin. The crowd went nuts.
Yeah.
They love jerky. So what I do is I go to the merch table immediately afterward and I say, you want to meet me? You want whatever? I'm here selling jerky all night. And I'm just moving, you know, moving bags of jerky all night. And
pushing product. Look at you.
He's so smart, this kid.
It's something I just genuinely believe in. Why not?
Good for you.
Well,
yeah, so I'm working on that right now. I'm excited to move a lot more units on tour, bring more jerky to the people. I always say to the female audience members, you know, jerky might not be your favorite snack of choice, but let me assure you, ladies, you're going to love my meat.
They love that. And they melt into goo.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So, I'm excited about it.
So you can actually literally go up to women and say, do you like my meat? And you can say it with a straight face because you're pushing product.
Right.
Unbelievable.
I'm pushing product.
Good for you. You can hit him up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Also, check out his website, ScrizzlyAdams.com. Scrizzly, best of luck. Thank you so much for joining us here in America Weekend.
Thank you, Scrizzly.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge.
I'm Christina Staffa.
And this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Sarah has been a professional babysitter for years, so people were shocked when she was arrested for being drunk while babysitting. Apparently, the oldest of six kids she was watching called the police one night and made the report. Sarah is over 21 years old, so what would be the actual charges against her? The Final Verdict after this.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
Order in the court.
Sarah was charged with six counts of endangering the welfare of a child, serious offenses, and obviously the end of her babysitting career. And that's the final verdict.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Did you know that your passwords are very, very predictable? And it's not difficult for thieves to figure them out. Here's the social science of it. 90% of passwords are highly familiar. Most use their name, children's or partner's name, even a pet's name. Teens use passwords associated with celebrity idols, cartoons, Homer Simpson or Madonna. Those are the two most popular fantasy passwords. Some passwords are very, sexual. Finally, only 10% of all passwords are cryptics and use strange-looking, boring, and unintelligible collection kind of gobbledygook numbers and letters. What's the cheap psychological trick? Go with boring passwords. Don't go with something that's top of mind. Never, ever give a hacker an even break. Did I nail your password? Let me know at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.